Welcome to MoneyWeb Now. Business news every morning.
It's Monday, 13 June. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, Tebisa Mathuba, we're going to be talking there the Fashini results, but of course, U.S. inflation, 40-year highs. Andrew Ditburner from Old Mutual Private Client Securities, pigeonholing and how to avoid it, and particularly the risks associated with it. And then Bongile James from Future Growth, electrical infrastructure. We've seen lots on paper, but we need to see execution happening. The show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. Morning headlines from MoneyWeb: how to get a Kalula.com or BA refund from Comair. Some T's and C's, but certainly there are options. Depends how you booked and paid, of course. Credit card holders can ultimately try a chargeback. Business Day: mining heads into more logistics woes down the track. Mineral Council's SA is expressing concern around logistics. Remember, we chatted with Dr. Chris Harmster last week about Q1 GDP. The only negative was mining, and he said it's infrastructure. It's just out and out infrastructure. Morning markets, it's all red, one exception. But US was red on Friday, S&P down 2.9, NASDAQ off 3.6. This morning in Asia, we've got Sydney off 1.25, Tokyo just over 2.5% down. Commodities red, gold the one exception, it is green, 1,868. Brent, $120.20 per barrel. Platinum, 960. Palladium, 1,917. Rand, 15.99. Top 40 opening call, 850 points down. That is 1.5% lower. That is Tencent trades down 4.5% in Hong Kong, and Bitcoin trades just over $25,000.
MoneyWeb Now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Joining now with Tebisa Mamathuba, investment analyst, F&B Wealth and Investment. Tebisa, appreciate the early morning. I suppose let's start with the bad news first. That was the U.S. inflation, 8.6%, 40-year record. The market had thought there was going to be 8.3. I suppose the all attention now turns to the Federal Open Monetary Committee, which meets later this week. And the question is not will they raise rates, but how much will they raise them by?
Indeed. Hi. Morning, Simon. Once again, the rising cost of living in the U.S. has increased. As you've mentioned, we saw on Friday that inflation print for the month of May moving up to 8.6% from 8.3% recorded in April, obviously, much higher than what the market had anticipated. You know, this is obviously a new cycle high, and, it is on the back of, higher rental costs, higher energy costs, as well as food prices. So this obviously makes it even more harder for Americans to afford everyday necessities. However, if you look at the core inflation print, which now strips out food and energy components in the index, this has increased 0.6% on a month-on-month basis. But it was also, much higher than what the market had predicted. However, if you look at it on a year-on-year basis, core inflation sort of eased slightly to 6% from 6.2% in the prior year. And then on the Federal Reserve Bank, they are raising interest rates, to try and slow the economy and tame inflation. Obviously, this is now, sort of sparking recession fears, particularly following this latest inflation print. But while the market is sort of pricing in a 50 basis point hike in June and July, we obviously are expecting another higher reading for inflation next month, which will obviously put even more pressure on the Federal Reserve Bank. So it would be interesting to sort of see, if the U.S. Federal Bank officials are going to adopt a more aggressive stance to policy tightening. Obviously, this will, increase more inflationary concerns and obviously spark those risks. But, in terms of consumers, they will just have to keep on paying more paying more house prices for basic necessities. You know, even though wages in general are, you know, not rising at a pace which is fast enough to sort of keep up with inflation, this will obviously put more strain on consumers and the economy in general.
Yeah, that wages, because wages aren't growing at even at the core rate, and I think that's part of the trick. Fashini Group results out on Friday. Giant numbers, lots of 400% here and the like increases, but of course that's because of the base effect. Quick thought on Fashini. I thought, not a bad set of numbers overall. The market was a bit sanguine, but maybe they were more focused on what was happening in the U.S.
Yeah, I mean, Simon, this was a very good, reading from Fashini Group. But obviously, as you've mentioned, the share price did come under pressure on Friday. And this was, as you've mentioned, you know, much of the focus was on this reading that we've just spoken about, this inflation reading, which sort of disappointed the market. That obviously dragged on, you know, most retailers or rather just, you know, stocks in general on Friday. And, you know, we saw, unfortunately, Fashini also, sort of sliding in sympathy there with the other retailers. But you know what, a very positive print from the group. You know, we saw revenue up 29%. Mm-hmm. The group achieved a record retail turnover of 43.4 billion rand, which increased 31%. And overall, revenue growth was ahead of expectations. So it was a very good print. They did deliver market share gains across all their territories, achieving 27% growth in men's and ladies' wear locally against an average market share growth of 5.9% for the segment. So this was quite a strong reading. And if you look at their cash retail turnover, this was up 33.6%. And obviously, this is despite, or rather, you know, considering the very challenging macroeconomic background, this is quite a positive one. The online retail growth was up 11.7%, and then credit retail turnover grew 24% compared to the same period last year, obviously on the back of a better than expected payment from their credit customers, as well as, you know, the continued improvements in the quality of the book. So their credit sales now sort of contributes about 29% of the Fashini Group Africa retail turnover. And then if you come now to expenses, expenses grew quite substantially. They grew about 20.9%, although this was a smaller proportion of retail turnover compared to the prior period, which was also positive. But, you know, they did say that employee costs rose quite substantially and obviously included the COVID-19 government relief payments that were made out last year.
Of course, and those payments that came through. We'll leave it there. And I always wonder, are there any market share? Who's losing? Is it Peppers at Mr. Price? But we'll leave that there to be some with her. Investment analyst, FNB Wealth and Investments. We're asking you on our poll today about that U.S. inflation, more notably the Federal Open Monetary Committee. How are they going to do with rates? Are they going to stick with their 0.5%? Are they going to go more aggressive? Someone over the weekend was saying to me they're going to do 1%. The Federal Reserve hasn't done that level of rate increase since the 90s.
We all have different investment needs. Some of us want to preserve our money for retirement, and others to create wealth for the next generation. At Stanlib, we have a team of investment specialists that can help you achieve any investment goal. So whether your money is looking for more certainty, more return, or more impact through your investments, we have a solution for your investment needs, no matter the time horizon. Join us over the next few months as we provide insights into the solutions we offer to meet your money needs. To find out more, visit stanlib.com or speak to your financial advisor. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. License number 719.
MoneyWeb now. On the money.
Chatting now with Andrew Dittman. He's a CIO at Old Mutual Private Client Securities. Andrew, appreciate the early morning time. A note you put out last week, which really I thought was great. It really got me thinking loads around how we invest and how we allocate. And I suppose at the core of it is around pigeonholing. And you make the point, acronyms can be fun. And there's loads of them. We've got Nifty 50s, FANGs, BRICS, Fragile 5s, emerging markets. If you stay with EMs for a moment, the trick with this pigeonholing is it's nice, it's fun, it's entertaining, but it can be dangerous. EMs, for example, are all fundamentally different from each other, and we need to be cognizant of that.
Morning, Carmen. So, you know, investors, I suppose, like to, you know, keep things simple, and sometimes we keep things too simple, you know, by pigeonholing into, you know, various factors, as you say, and, you know, to taking emerging markets. I think it's risky to, you know, categorize all of them, you know, as the same, or packaging them as the same, because we know they're all very, very different. You know, they might look cheaper than developed markets, you know, their growth outlooks often look different. But if you actually, you know, look at each one independently, you know, they're all very different. South Africa is very different from what China is, you know, politically, geopolitically, from a liquidity perspective, demographics, regulation, you know, so you've actually got to, I think it's a bit more nuanced, you know, than just, you know, taking a blanket approach and saying, let's get emerging market exposure. You actually have to, you know, look at each country independently.
I take the point in that, and you also, I mean, you mentioned it for commodities as well, that in the commodity space, we can say commodities are doing great, but actually there are certain commodities which are doing great. There are others that are lagging. There's some that are under pressure. But there are exceptions to this rule, in a sense. And you make that point with, for example, semiconductor. You make it with biotech. And in a sense, this is because of maybe the complexity of those industries, and also to a degree, particularly with biotech, the newness of it, where it perhaps is worth the thought to say, sort of go wider rather than niche.
Yeah, so commodities is a good example, I think. You know, investors coming from my perspective, it's incredibly difficult to value. They're very, very cyclical. And you typically say, you know, well, the question that we often get asked is, you know, what's your view on commodities? And I think that's the wrong question to be asking. You've actually just got to look at each one independently, and suddenly when you look at or understand the different drivers and the long-term dynamics of the different commodities, suddenly that cyclical nature of them tends to disappear. You know, so you use the example of semiconductors. You can almost think of semiconductors as a commodity themselves, if you think about it. You know, when you look back probably 10, 20 years, you know, very cyclical nature, depending on, you know, if a new iPhone was coming out, whereas now, you know, they're more, the demand is, I suppose, a lot more steady. And now they're cyclical, given that, you know, semiconductors go into almost every single thing that we touch these days. But commodities as well, you know, if you look at, you know, take your PGMs for instance, there's a lot of other, you know, different commodities. It's not just, everyone thinks of palladium and platinum, but there's iridium, ruthenium, rhodium, you know, that's still underneath there. And they've all got different drivers. They go into, you know, lithium batteries, some are used in medical equipment, some are used for cancer drugs, solar panels, etc. So again, you know, just, I suppose, pigeonholing and saying commodities, what's your view on commodities? I think that's the wrong question to be asking. Rather, you know, again, look at each one independently, very different drivers, and suddenly that cyclical nature will tend to disappear.
And as an investor, it kind of then leaves us having to tread that line between complexity, and I suspect, and you make the point in your article that we often veer to too complex because we believe that would bring success, and that's not necessarily the case. We've got to tread that sort of line between keeping things simple and not overcomplicating, and find that middle road.
Exactly. So investors, I suppose, and professional investors at that, I suppose, like to, you know, look very clever and have complicated formulas and use complicated systems to, you know, build portfolios or value equities. And, you know, there's a picture that's done around, how true it is, I'm not too sure, but you see Warren Buffett, you know, sitting on his desk, and in the background, he doesn't have a computer, there's no Bloomberg terminal, there's no army of analysts. And there's a folder on his desk that says too hard, and it says, you know, something comes across his desk that's too hard. He puts it in there, and then from there, it's a short jump into the bin. You know, he keeps things very, very simple. And, you know, as I say, you know, we tend to, or investors tend to be on the wrong side of that, but then you can also go, you know, to the complete other end of the spectrum and be too simple and say, well, let's, you know, it's emerging markets or tech companies. You know, tech's another great example. You know, very, very different businesses. You just look today, Netflix, I think, down 70% this year. Apple's down, you know, 15%. You know, very, very different businesses. You know, one's monoline, one's got diversified revenue streams. You know, it could be too simple and just say, well, it's tech or it's value versus growth. You know, that's all, I think, just, I suppose, keeping things a little bit too simple. But again, you know, we don't want to go on to the other side of the equation and be trying to look too clever by using complicated systems.
Yeah, and that, my sense, is almost what that more than anything, perhaps, what investing is. It's finding that sort of threading through the middle between complexity and simplicity, and not going too extreme either way. Andrew Detman, CIO at Old Mutual Private Client Services, appreciate the early morning.
We all have different investment needs. Some of us want to preserve our money for retirement, and others to create wealth for the next generation. At Stanlib, we have a team of investment specialists that can help you achieve any investment goal. So whether your money is looking for more certainty, more return, or more impact through your investments, we have a solution for your investment needs, no matter the time horizon. Join us over the next few months as we provide insights into the solutions we offer to meet your money needs. To find out more, visit stanlib.com or speak to your financial advisor. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. License number 719.
MoneyWeb now. On the money. Also available on podcast.
Chilling now with Bagulie James from Future Growth. Bagulie, appreciate the time again this morning. Talking Eskom and load shedding now in its 15th year, 14th year, and 2022 is on track to perhaps being a record year for number of days, number of hours of load shedding. That said, I mean, the government actually has made a number of fairly notable sort of announcements since, 2019 or so. They've got plans, but they're just not executing on them, and projects just aren't closing.
Morning, Simon. Thanks for having me. That is correct. I mean, certainly, one can say are very good at planning. We have a lot of plans on paper, but when it comes to execution, that's where we're falling short. There's been, a lot of excitement in the market about the emergency power procurement plan, which was meant to feed to the grid about 2 gigawatts of power. This was announced in 2020. If the timelines communicated then were followed, we would be expecting to see a lot of those projects being commissioned and, producing power or generating power to go into the grid. Mm. As we speak today, only 3 of those have signed PPAs and are expected to reach financial close in 60 days, which is around about August this year. And there's a lot of, litigation and environmental approvals that plague the other projects. Now, with Round 5, which is the Renewable Energy Independent Power Producers Procurement Program, this was launched in April 2021 last year, and preliminary bidders were announced about 6-7 months ago. We're still waiting for those projects to reach financial close. And funny enough, financial close is only expected to be reached between July and September this year. So there's a lot of plans, just lack of execution on the government side.
Is this regulatory, and I'm thinking perhaps it's environmental standing in the way, perhaps it's the various different departments. I mean, my sense is almost we need Eskom to sort of almost step aside and let the process happen. But I suspect that a lot of those bottlenecks are actually not Eskom.
That's true. Look, a lot of the regulatory processes and approvals are not moving fast enough to allow these projects to reach financial close. It's no secret that we know several departments in the government are battling to issue permits and consents, things like water use licenses, as you said, environmental approvals. I think to a certain extent the government does acknowledge that it does need to relax a bit of these stringent and requirements. Particularly if we look at the captive power space, there's obviously, as you would know, a relaxation of, one needing to get a generation license if they have up to 100 megawatts of embedded power that they can generate. NERSA has recently said, as one of the CPGs, we are now relaxing the need for a developer to have a PPA. Which means now this shortens the time frames and makes it easier for projects to go through the registration and approval process that NERSA is running. And, I mean, not to bash the government, just to give a bit of credit, there's been about 16 projects that have been approved, and there's about 54 projects in the pipeline, which are expected to, generate about 4 to 5 megawatts. So with this relaxation, I guess, of the CP to have a PPA, we should expect to see a lot more projects getting approved. Also, there's been, I guess, from the government side as a positive, increasing of capacity or plans to increase capacity in ESCOM to process grid connection applications. And these projects, these captive power projects, are now being designated as strategic infrastructure projects, which will also again reduce time frames. So these are, you know, the interventions from the government side, which we have been waiting for, and these are just meant to address the systematic constraints that we've just been referring to.
I hear you, and sort of step out the way and maybe start getting things to start moving, because they seem to have been stuck. Bongile James, Future Growth, appreciate, as always, the early morning. That's it for today. Our poll on Friday, we asked you around gold. It's flat year to date, which means it's well ahead of equities indices, which are all in the red so far year to date. My question was, surely it should be having a better year. Inflation, interest rates, war, so on and so on. A fifth of you said, you know what, flat is actually the new winning. Not a bad point. I mean, you're flat. That's well ahead of equities, as I said. Almost half of you said, give it time, whilst a third of you said, nah, man, gold is old school. Have your vote. Have your say, Twitter and LinkedIn. This show is brought to you by StanLib. Visit StanLib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. StanLib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. We're live every weekday morning on the MoneyWeb website and app, 6:30 a.m. Podcast available just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie Nabokle, Nicole Tetetso, to you for listening, my guests for their early morning. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.